Welcome to The Common Sense Show with your host, Dave Hodges. We discuss a variety of topics here, including the deep state, the New World Order, Agenda 21. There is no one, no topic beyond Dave's reach, because as you know, you can't dodge the Hodge.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges. I am the host of The Common Sense Show, and we are the show that's freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. We're in hour number two, and we are joined again by Robert David Steele, former decorated clandestine officer of the CIA. He's got a lot of titles, done a lot of things, and we talked about that in the first hour. And we are going to talk about a number of issues. We're going to start this hour with Venezuela, but first I need to let you know that, again, the storable food, 70% off. I mean, it's not going to last forever, and you need 6 months to 2 years, depending on who you talk to. Restaurant quality, no glyphosates, no GMOs, 25-year shelf life. Go to preparewithdave.com. They'll tell you everything you need to know. Food, water, guns, gold, ammo, a bunch of other stuff, but we can help you with the food. This is what you need to get ready. Also, too, we're brought to you by ReadyMadeResources.com. Very best in prepping, night vision, communications, you name it. Bob Griswold has it. ReadyMadeResources.com. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go right to Robert David Steele. And, Robert, I'd like to jump into the Venezuela situation. I'm concerned about the axis of unity. I'm concerned Venezuela and Iran are, in part, behind the migrant caravans coming here to wreak havoc. And I'd like to explore that a little bit. But first, let's get into the internal politics of Venezuela and what's going on with Maduro.
All right. But let me say, please don't say I'm a decorated CIA veteran. I am a military veteran. And that has a very specific term. And I have not been decorated by the military. And CIA, I have two awards, but they don't count as decorations.
Oh, okay. I should just say award winning. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, well, I'm also notorious because I want to cut 70% of their budget, and they don't like that. But bottom line here is that I think Mike Pompeo's in way over his head, and I think the president has been misled and misadvised. He should not have intervened in Venezuelan politics. The election, however flawed it may have been, was an internal matter. Maduro has the full support of his government and his military. And I have to point out that because President Trump has recognized the Speaker of the House in Venezuela, a person who did not run in the election, Venezuela, Cuba, Iran, Russia, and Turkey could turn right around and say, well, we're going to recognize Nancy Pelosi as the legitimate president of the United States of America. How do you like them apples, Donald? I'm really worried that the president is being screwed over by the Secretary of State and the acting Secretary of Defense, who I might point out is a contractor. This is insane.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with what you're saying. Let's kind of blend two issues now. Every time I turn around, I'm finding this axis of unity being connected to these immigrant waves of which Venezuela has been a central part of. What are your thoughts on this and the threat posed by Venezuela in this regard?
Look, I served in Venezuela. And I have to tell you that Venezuela is not about Venezuela being a threat. It's about Venezuelan gold and Venezuelan oil, and we want to steal it. I'm reminded of a past president that went to the president of Mexico and said, you know, we need for you to declare that Cuba is a threat to your national security in Mexico. And the Mexican president looked right at the American president and says, I can't do that. And the guy said, why? And he said, because if I said that Cuba was a threat to Mexican national security, 40 million Mexicans would die laughing. Okay, I'm sorry, but Venezuela is not a threat to the United States of America. Neither is Cuba, neither is Iran, and neither is North Korea. And I think Donald Trump has the right instincts. He gets all of this. But the military-industrial state and its servant Congress, which just passed some kind of law or sense of Congress, I'm not sure which, that says that we can't leave NATO. Well, we should leave NATO, because NATO is a fascist warmongering organization. It's the world's most expensive travel agency, and it exists to bomb pieces people into the Stone Age so we can steal their gold, their oil, and their water, which is what we did to Libya. So I may be a Reagan Republican. I certainly despise the existing two-party tyranny. But the bottom line is I am with General Smedley Butler, the most decorated Marine in the proper sense of the term in his time, who wrote a book saying war is a racket. The Department of Defense is designed to support the bankers over the public, and it is designed to loot the public with very expensive weapon systems that cannot win wars.
I don't have any disagreement with you on that whatsoever.
No, look, you know, we should leave Venezuela to its own devices. Donald Trump has done a great job getting America energy independence. He's been so successful on so many fronts, but he hasn't focused on reconnecting with the public. He hasn't focused on restoring integrity to Congress. He hasn't focused on restoring integrity to the media. He hasn't focused on a racketeering investigation of Google Gestapo. So he's really left a lot of cards on the table. Now, I'm told that he has some really significant announcements to make in the next couple of weeks. I'm told that if and when he does the State of the Union, that it could be a bombs bursting in air kind of delivery. I'm worried that it will be lame, because we were all expecting him to use 9/11 this year to announce a congressional investigation and to announce a criminal grand jury in New York. And he didn't. What the president did on 9/11 this year was lame. Now, we have a criminal grand jury finally being organized in New York. And it may be that we're on the way toward indicting Dick Cheney and Larry Silverstein and the governors of New York and New Jersey and so forth. But the bottom line here, you know, boy, I hope it wasn't Chris Christie who was governor at the time. The bottom line here is that 9/11 and the Zionists and election reform are going to be the trifecta in 2020. And Donald Trump should not be screwing around with places like Venezuela right now. He should be focusing on the home front.
And you just said the magic word here, because we have stations that join us in the second hour, and you use the word Zionism. Let's put that first hour disclaimer out that you started off the show with.
I'm glad to have you give me that chance, because I am probably the most – I'm the person who has most articulated the difference between Zionism and Judaism. Zionism, evil. Judaism, good. The Zionists are the criminals who are running the Zionist state of Israel and genociding the Palestinians and bribing, blackmailing, and lying to the U.S. Congress. The Zionists are the people who are destroying the U.S. economy, the U.S. government, and U.S. society. The 9 million Jews in America, a few of whom are being leveraged and manipulated by the Zionists. Most of them are decent U.S. citizens who are assimilated and who are not by any stretch of the imagination the source of Zionist power in the USA. 9 million Jews, 200 million voters. The source of Zionist criminal power in the United States is bribery, blackmail, and lies, and also computer and communications cyber espionage.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you explain. It was very, very clear. In an early point in my career in the media, I was asked by someone who used to carry my articles on their site, and I didn't pay close attention. And they called me one day and they said, "Dave, I need to have you write about how the Jews are a problem." And I said, "Well, define problem." And they went into some of the things we're talking about here. And I said, "I can't do that." I said, "I know Jews that have never heard of the New World Order. They have nothing to do with the New World Order." I said, "Zionism is something entirely separate." I said, "I'll address that, but I'm not attacking Jews."
That's absolutely right. The Jews are not the problem.
This person said, "Well, I can't carry your articles." And I said, "Well, good riddance.
Dave,
good riddance. That's fine.
Let me make a point I made earlier. I've got a phi beta iota.net. If people search for 30 and Zion, they'll get the 30 strikes of Zionism that I've documented with a link for each one. And I'm very pleased to say that Haaretz, which is the best journal in Israel, agrees with me. Haaretz had a headline a few months ago which said, "Is it time for all Jews to boycott Israel?" And the answer is a resounding yes. Israel, the Zionist state of Israel, is now made 23 or 25 states in the U.S. will not allow you to work for the state or have a contract with the state if you call for the boycott of Israel. Mm-hmm. That is a violation of the First Amendment to begin with. And then we have a Congress which has introduced laws which make it a felony to be critical of Zionist Israel. This is insane. Every senator and every representative who sponsored that legislation should be run out of office on a rail.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, Zionism is no more Judaism than the Democratic Party is Americanism.
Excellent point.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm glad we cleaned that up because people are going to come in and say, oh, are they bashing Jews? No, we're not.
Oh, well, let me tell you, this is actually a good chance to bring up the Hannity explosion. There's an excellent film that is banned on YouTube because the Anti-Defamation League, the Zionist Secret Police, is the trusted flagger for YouTube. And this video, which was very thoughtfully put together, is called God's Chosen People. And it can also be found at phibetaiota.net. And in there at the 5-minute mark, it has James Trafficante, former Congressman James Trafficante, on Fox News explaining that the Zionists own every member of Congress. Okay? Sean Hannity goes nuts. Sean Hannity says, oh my God, you're anti-Semitic. And of course, that's not the case. What Sean Hannity does in this short clip within this movie, God's Chosen People, is demonstrate that Sean Hannity is a Zionist tool.
Interesting. That's very interesting. But it's not surprising. It's Fox.
Yes, I think Fox is a Zionist tool.
Well, the media is pro-New World Order in Zionists of any breed, whether it's Rothschilds or they come out of Netanyahu's office. They're all after the same thing. They're all after denationalizing.
There's a post that's about to come out. A reporter recently called Israel the third rail in U.S. journalism. Touch it and you die. And that's what you and I and others are breaking down now. I think Alex Jones was controlled by the Zionists. There were lines that he could not cross, but he was a great American hero and he did serve well in his time. But what is happening right now, and I'm proud to claim a certain amount of credit for this, is the American public is waking up to the fact that the Zionists are a parasite in this country. Not the Jews, the Zionists. And when I say Zionists, I'm talking about people like Jeffrey Epstein, who entraps congressmen with pedophilia. I'm talking about Harvey Weinstein, pedophiles in Hollywood. I'm talking about judges that are controlled by the Zionists. Matt Taibbi wrote an excellent book called The Divide about two justice systems. There's one justice system for the rich. There's another one for the rest of us. I'll also point out there are two vaccination systems. There's one vaccination system where we're all required to get vaccinations that are bad for us. And then there is the system for the rich where doctors are basically bribed to sign off for children as if they have received the vaccinations, but in fact they have not. None of this is being properly overseen or investigated by the U.S. government.
That is fascinating. I have heard this before, but I've not heard it in a venue like this, and that's really, really interesting. It's something that I would like to do a future show with you on, at least in part.
Well, I'm not the right guy. I would go with John Rappaport, who is absolutely the best guy on this topic.
Yeah, he's very good.
Yeah, and there are other people that can talk about 5G and geoengineering and stuff like that. I'd certainly be glad to help you with references to people I know. My strength is the depravity of the U.S. government, the worthlessness of the secret intelligence community, the inability of the Department of Defense to win wars. In fact, the Army War College just came out with a study which said, without question, the war on Iraq had only one winner, and that winner's name was Iran.
Wow. Explain that.
Well, I used to be an external researcher for the Army War College, the Strategic Studies Institute. In fact, they paid me $9,000 to do a 3-monograph series on grand strategy, which is perfectly suited to the president's use. And then they refused to publish it because one of my conclusions was that we should close all of our military bases around the world. But the Strategic Studies Institute has integrity to a certain extent, and they did a proper study, and what they found was not only did we not win the war in Iraq, the Iraqis lost it by being so mediocre, but the cost of the war, including our PTSD veterans and our amputees, 75,000 amputees and so forth, it just was not worth it. And ultimately, it turns out that Iran basically fooled the United States into going to war in Iraq, and Donald Rumsfeld and the neocons fell for it in part because Israel also wanted us to go to war in Iraq. You could say that the axis of evil here was the Israeli-Iranian connection, both of them wanting to suck the United States into the Middle East. Big mistake.
Why was that such a mistake from your perspective?
It's a good question that would take a couple of years to answer. Look, I am the top author. I'm the top reviewer for nonfiction in the English language. 2,500 reviews over 98 categories. And people can find all of my reviews, and I've got them grouped. For instance, I've got a whole bunch of books on war as a racket, bunch of books on defense, bunch of books on foreign policy. What it boils down to is I was recommended for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2017 because I've put together holistic analytics, true cost economics, and open source everything engineering as the way in which we create a prosperous world at peace, a world that works for everyone. Okay? As Donald Trump has clearly stated, we spent $7 billion in the Middle East and we have nothing to show for it. He could also have said, we have nothing to show for it there, and we have destroyed ourselves here at home. We have 75,000 amputees. We have 250,000 people with PTSD. We have completely destroyed our manufacturing industry. We have completely wiped out communities across America. We have basically lost an entire generation of people to war in the Middle East. Okay? So the true cost of our being Israel's bully boy and England's bully boy, the true cost is not the $7 trillion we spent in the United States in the Middle East. It's the $43 trillion we allowed the banks to steal from us while we were dabbling in war. Okay? You really got to put America first. And if you're going to put America first, you need to focus on America. You need to focus on families and communities and small businesses. You need to focus on building the wall. You need to focus on making E-Verify work so that nobody in the United States can work if they're not supposed to be here. You should also apply that to lodging. They should not be able to get or rent a place if they can't satisfy E-Verify. Okay, bottom line here is the U.S. government is corrupt to the bone, and it's not doing its job for America.
Like I said, again, a tsunami that we're bailing out the water with a teaspoon. I mean, this is just overwhelming material.
Well, the good news is that the president, and I certainly hope he runs and wins again. I think he will win. He's got a $100 million war chest, and with the things that I think he's going to do in 2019, it ought to be a walkover. And the Democratic candidates are just a bunch of losers, with the exception of Cynthia McKinney if she announces. And I hope she announces, because she could give Donald Trump a run for his money. And if he were a really, really clever person, he would run against Cynthia McKinney and then invite her to be his vice president. This would be an extraordinary act. He would form a coalition cabinet instead of having all his billionaire buddies there. He would submit a balanced budget that gradually draws the U.S. government down to 50% of its present size over his 4-year term, or at least 25% over his 4-year term. Bottom line is the president right now is not doing all he can do. He is not being as effective as he could be because he's all alone. As far as I can tell, he is all alone. The people around him in the House and the White House are either his direct enemies or generally worthless.
So what does he do to combat that? He's running out of time.
Well, I think he's got some major initiatives that are planned, and I hope that he'll do that. But I have suggested three specific things that the president can do.
Okay, let's do it.
4 million people have read this memo. 4 million people. But I can't get through to the president in the sense that I know he's read the memo, but he's being told not to do it.
Okay, what should he do?
Throw the press out of the White House.
Agreed.
Repurpose that space into three different things. A Trump studio from which he can give fireside chats and control 7-minute videos from everybody across the government to and from the public. Create an open source agency that creates a truth channel that allows him to interact directly with 200 million voters. And I mean a two-way interaction. That's not something his people understand. And finally, eliminate the National Security Council, which is how the deep state controls the White House. Create a small national strategy council. Someone like General Tony Zinni would be ideal as the head of that small strategy council. Bottom line for me is that the president has not connected with the 99%. He can't control the communications between him and the public. He is having his mail filtered. He is not hearing from the public because people are filtering what the public is trying to communicate to the president. He is the only man in America who has not only the right, but the obligation to listen to every single American. And he's not doing that. That's what I want to change.
If you can't get to him, and if people aren't getting to him in general, I don't know how the change is going to happen.
Well, this is something I wasn't planning to address, but I will. Let me just say that your listeners can find the memo at tinyurl.com/Trump Triumph. tinyurl.com/Trump Triumph. I am a nonprofit educator, and it has never been my intent to be a political person. All I want to do is run the open source agency for Donald Trump and make him the greatest president ever. Although I was in a humorous aside, I was recommended for Secretary of Defense because I'm the only guy with the combination needed to put DOD across the border. And we probably should talk about that at some point. He's being slow rolled by the Department of Defense right now. The contractor that is the acting Secretary of Defense is basically ignoring the president. He's toadying to the president. He's sucking up to the president, but he's not actually doing anything useful for the president. And the service chiefs, all four of them, including Bob Neller, who was a lieutenant with me in Battalion Landing Team 3-4, the service chiefs want nothing to do with border defense, even though that is a core mission. So he's got some issues. But here is a speculative. Imagine if someone like me were to run against President Trump. And the first time that we're on a stage together, I say to him, Mr. President, you've got my vote. And the only reason I'm running against you is because it's the only way I could get you to listen.
That'd be quite of an expensive conversation.
Well, I've actually been offered $200 million to do that.
Are you going to take up the offer?
The short answer is no. I'm going to take up the offer of $200 million to create the Truth Channel, and I'm going to hope that the president will understand that he can do better with my trumpets than he's getting with his Twitters.
But again, he has to become aware of it. This is why there needs to be a house cleaning, and he needs to go to people that he can be reasonably sure are not compromised. Stop listening to his advisors on who to appoint.
Well, I really don't know. I mean, you can't, I can't conceive of the pressure that he's under. I do believe, and I've written extensively about this, I do believe that he and General Secretary Xi Jinping in China and Vladimir Putin have an understanding. I think the president needs to personally meet with the presidents of Syria and Turkey and Iran without witnesses. Translators only. There's no substitute for presidential face-to-face communications. And I also believe that he's severely hampered by the fact that the secret intelligence community is either lying to him outright or not giving him 96% of the information that he needs. General Tony Zinni is on record as saying that when he was commanding general of the Central Command, he got less than 4%, at best 4% of what he needed from the secret intelligence community. I mean, our president, for all of the instincts that he's got that are going great, and for all of the sound stuff that he seems to be doing on the economic level, he's absolutely not cutting the mustard when it comes to getting access to all of the information that would make him great, communicating to the public, and restoring integrity to the Congress. For example, if the president were to introduce the hashtag on rig, Election Integrity Act, and then point out to the public the differences between this act, which Cynthia McKinney and I have crafted based on the work of thousands of people. It includes 12 specific reforms that are absolutely essential, including paper ballots counted publicly on site. If he were to do that and then tell people that Nancy Pelosi is the H.R. 1 version, which seeks to give the vote to non-U.S. citizens, it's game over. Yeah. I can't get the president to introduce the Election Reform Act, which is the single thing that would take him from 27% to 45% in 2020.
So what are your options? I mean, he's
Oh, my options are simple. I mean, it's a blessing that people are coming to me with money. I haven't seen it yet. But if and when I get to cut checks, then I'm going to place a whole bunch of million-dollar bets. The first one will go to BitChute, which is the honest replacement for YouTube. There's a couple of people in line, and Gab may be one of them, but I don't think Gab is ready for prime time yet, to replace Twitter. DuckDuckGo, Yandex, actually in Russia, Alibaba against Amazon in China. We've done a lot of homework, and by placing about $21 million bets, and by having a global series of conversations that foster an open space, open source software discussion about how to completely displace hashtag Google Gestapo, I think I can create a direct democracy network and toolkit that has never been conceptualized before. Everybody else is building stovepipes intended to divide and conquer, and dumb down and mislead. I'm the first guy I know of that is actually focused on empowering the public.
I just wish there was a way to break through to him. You know, I honestly feel, well, Paul Martin said this to me recently. He said the president should be sequestered. He should be in people he only trusts, declare martial law, and start the tribunals. Is that even practical?
Well, I don't think we need martial law. I think martial law would create more problems than it would create. Martial law would create more trouble than it's worth, to include there are an awful lot of preppers and survivalists and so forth who are losing faith in Donald Trump. And I'm afraid that if he implemented martial law, it would turn every person in uniform into a target. And I don't want that. So I think martial law is a very bad idea. Now, the whole idea about being sequestered, let me give you an example from the military. In the military, when someone builds a weapon system and it doesn't work the way it's supposed to, and it has deficiencies, the military classifies. It makes those deficiencies top secret. The result of making the deficiencies top secret is that it gives the moron that built the problem in the first place a lifetime license to fix it. It doesn't allow people who had nothing to do with the system in the first place to come in. Donald Trump is not harnessing the collective intelligence of the American public. And I've got a lot more faith in Joe Plummer than I do in John Bolton. Okay? So the president is basically isolated. He does not have the open source agency capability that he needs to be able to pulse the entire country. I mean, I've got two pollsters, one on the left, one on the right. Ray Paul on the left and Andrew Garfield on the right. For $300,000, I can have both of those guys undress the nation and give Trump what the nation is thinking down to the last pubic hair. Okay? He doesn't have that kind of capability. What he has is the high-priced pollsters who are owned by the deep state, who are basically lying to the president, or they're so bad at their job, they're not actually drilling down and giving the president the data he needs. So I really feel that our president means well. He will continue to have my support unless he declares that he's not running for 2020, at which point all bets are off. But I think he's literally got his hands tied behind his back by the system that he's allowed to capture him.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because that's how I view this. The system has captured him. He's rendered impotent at the moment. I know you said there's a strategic pause coming up, but let me back up. First of all, let me ask you a qualifying question here. What do you think of QAnon?
That's a great question. I personally suspect Mike Flynn is in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. I think QAnon has been a very useful exercise. It has, I think, had a satisfactory degree of correlation to reality. But QAnon has only reached a tiny fraction of the public. It has not reached mom and pop. It has not reached teenagers. It has not reached the elderly who are desperately in medical debt. It hasn't reached the students who have student loans that are killing them. QAnon is a fad. It is not mainstream. What the president needs is a mainstream truth channel where he can say something and every single one of our 200 million voters can hear him. And then they have to be able to send back a text or an email or whatever. And the president has to have a dashboard that allows him to see all of that. I have personal experience with White House petitions. When we did the hashtag unrigged petition trying to get the president to submit the Election Reform Act, we have screenshots showing our petition losing 50 votes every second.
How does that happen?
Because they're manipulating it. They don't want that petition to get the required 100,000 votes. So they literally manipulate it. Just as Google has been manipulating trends and polls and surveys, Twitter is manipulating who the president... I mean, the president's reach in Twitter is down by 75% because Jack Dorsey is allowing his people to screw with the president.
You think that would have been enough impetus right there for Trump to go after the social media?
Again, I'm not the president. I don't know what's going on in his own head. I do have a suspicion that the people who are talking to him don't understand the social media as well as I do. They don't understand the social media as well as my advisors do. I mean, Stephen E. Arnold, for example, the CEO of Arnold IT, is the absolute top guy in the planet in terms of understanding Amazon, Google, and the social media. And then, of course, I'm friends with Bill Binney, who understands the insecurity of it all. The president told Mike Pompeo to meet Bill Binney. Pompeo met Binney and blew him off. Pompeo basically did not fulfill the president's expectations. And the president is so overloaded, he doesn't follow up. I think that's the one big problem I have. Apart from the president's being spread too thin, because he's spread too thin, he doesn't see things through.
Listen, I agree with you on that point. So then he needs to prioritize work from the top down, reform from the top down, bring in people that he knows aren't going to screw him from the top down.
Well, see, that's why kicking the press out of the White House is such a good idea.
I could not agree with you more.
Donald Trump is a real estate guy. The single most precious real estate on the planet is White House floor space. To waste White House floor space on scum like Acosta from CNN is beyond belief. When the president was ordered by the court to restore Acosta's credentials, he should have restored Acosta's credentials and closed the White House to the press immediately, cleared them all out. That space should be Donald Trump's war room. It should be a strategy council space, a Trump studio space, an open source agency space. It could also have a national prayer office. And I've actually got a chart, a floor plan that shows the national prayer office in that space. So people can go to tinyurl.com/Trump Triumph. And if they know anybody who knows the president, or if they know anybody who knows somebody who knows the president, then by golly, send Trump Triumph to the president, because that's the piece that will make him great. That combined with election reform. See, if you combine a truth channel with election reform, with military tribunals, all of a sudden you've cleaned up the government and you've made America the Beautiful, America the First possible. The president right now is inching toward that, but he's not playing with all of the clubs in his golf cart.
Okay, now, you have said something very interesting, and I totally agree with you. We're back to he needs to get control of what comes out of the White House in terms of media releases. I totally agree with that. But there's one topic we really haven't hit on that I think is important. What should he be doing with the border?
Well, you have just led into my, this is my application to be Secretary of Defense. And if folks want to see what I think the president should do about the border, they should go to phibetaiota.net and they should look at the second headline, which is how our military can help defend the border. And in that post, which is on update number eight points out that the Democrats and the Republicans have approved $114 billion in documented waste, from which the border could be easily paid for. But here's the key point that I make, Dave, in this post. The acting Secretary of Defense, who is a contractor, who should never, ever be allowed to be the acting Secretary of Defense, and the service chiefs are rolling the president. They want nothing to do with border defense. Now, let's define border defense. Is it a wall? Okay, some of it needs to be a wall. Who should build the wall? Should we farm that out to Northrop Grumman and Lockheed and all these other people at enormous expense? Or should we maybe use existing capabilities? What are those existing capabilities? Right now, the Pentagon is slow rolling the president because they're leading him to believe that the Army Corps of Engineers is the only golf club he's got. The Army Corps of Engineers is like a five iron, okay? Well, guess what? The Department of Defense is trained, equipped, and organized to do two major wars at once. That means that not only do they have enough people in the infantry and the Air Force and so forth to fight two major wars, they also have enough combat engineers to do two major wars. Now, most of your listeners probably remember the Seabees. These are the guys that would go into islands in the South Pacific and create airfields and ports and so forth, literally overnight. Okay? The U.S. Navy Seabees are as good as it gets at expeditionary combat engineering. The U.S. Air Force has an equivalent, the Red Horse Squadrons. These people can go in and create entire airfields overnight. They all have bulldozers and all of the heavy construction equipment and so forth. The U.S. Army has entire combat engineer brigades, while the smaller Marine Corps has combat engineer battalions. All right? If the president had a Secretary of Defense he could trust, who actually understood the Secretary of Defense, he could give a mission-type order, which is seal the border. If I were Secretary of Defense, I seal the border by assigning the California border to the Marine Corps, the Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas borders to the Army, and I tell them, you will put whatever combination you wish of infantry, air surveillance, and combat engineers building, what do you call these things, where the ground is pushed up, embankments and so forth. You will use whatever combination of capabilities you have, but you will go down there and you will seal that border. And if there is a rattlesnake that gets across, I'm firing your ass.
I think it's a good plan.
It's part of the plan. I have to say, unless you do e-verify, unless you make it impossible to be employed or get a place to sleep in the United States without e-verify, then it's going to continue to be a problem. And by the way, our northern border is a very serious problem. The Asian drug gangs are coming in from Canada. And the northern border also needs to be sealed. That's for another time. The other thing I think is that this military exercise could be billed as a peacetime exercise. The military is supposed to be able to seal an area and interdict individual guerrilla fighters. If they can't do that on our southern border, we need to seriously think about firing the entire flag officer corps.
Well, let's get into that a little bit more. Let's go back to that proposal. How would that make us stronger? How would that help the Trump presidency?
Well, one of the questions I was asked by someone else was, how would you pay for it? And one of the points that I made was that this is an opportunity for the president to really think through what his grand strategy is with respect to national security. I will put it to you that all of our military bases overseas are being used as smuggling lily pads. They're not there for national security. They're there to make it possible for the military and CIA and private sector contractors like Cynthia McKinney fried them publicly. Anyway, they're smuggling guns, gold, drugs, cash, and small children. Okay? All of these military bases are basically a drain on the national treasury. We should bring our military home. We need to rebuild our military from scratch, and it needs to be a military that can go to war without a contractor being required for every laptop. Right now, our military can't even repair vehicles in the field. It actually requires contractors to repair vehicles in the field. We have completely screwed up how we train, equip, and organize our force because we've done the same thing to the military that Jim Clapper did to the intelligence community. We've made it an outsourced military. This is why Eric Prince, who, by the way, is a member of a very famous Michigan Republican family, this is why Eric Prince thinks he's going to be the new Department of Defense over my dead body. I think we really need to get back to universal service with a twist. I want everybody to serve as part of building cultural coherence and collaboration. But after boot camp, you can choose between the armed forces, the Peace Corps, and Homeland Response. We have just completely lost sight of the value of shared service as part of bonding our communities together. We've completely lost sight of the fact that the military is supposed to win wars, not just spend money. There's a lot of stuff that goes into this. Bottom line is that defending the southern border is a defense mission that the president can order. And if the Department of Defense can't do it, it needs to be burned to the ground.
Well, that we agree on. You mentioned three parts of universal service. I got the Peace Corps and
armed forces okay. Traditionally.
Okay.
Peace Corps. I think the Peace Corps and the U.S. Information Agency were two of the best pieces of the U.S. government. And the Open Source Agency would essentially reinstate the U.S. Information Agency. But Peace Corps, Armed Services, and Homeland Service. First responders, conservationists, national park. There's all kinds of things that people can do if they want to reject learning how to kill people or if they want to reject leaving their country. My point is that people need to be brought together. I mean, when I first entered the Marine Corps, that was the first time I'd ever slept next to a black person. And I remember vividly my drill sergeant, Gunnery Sergeant Roy Kelly, telling us we have dark green Marines and we have light green Marines and you all bleed red. That's what universal service does.
That's an interesting approach. Talk about the Peace Corps. Are you talking an international flavor of it or would you do this domestically?
Well, that's a really great point that you make because it should be both domestic and international. The open source everything engineering solution for the 17 sustainable development goals allows you to basically solve all 17 sustainable development goals, including the water crisis, at 10% the cost of the Western model. The Western economic model is 50% waste and 90% profit for the bank. My friend, Dr. Marcin Jakubowski, the CEO of Open Source Ecology, has created something he calls the Global Village Construction Set. And he's documented that we can build all of the major tools for civilization at 10 to 20% the cost of what's being charged now. Take, for example, a John Deere tractor, which costs about $250,000 and has secret software that the farmer is not allowed to repair. And when the tractor breaks down, it has to be pulled out in a very expensive trailering process and taken to a John Deere facility where secret repairs are made. An open source tractor, which has been built and which could be built in the millions, costs 10%, $25,000. An open source tractor costs $25,000 and has plug and play parts, none of them secret, some of which can be printed by the farmer on a 3D printer in their farmhouse. Okay? So we need to change our entire approach to the economy and to manufacturing. And I think often of Texas. Texas has 30 towns that are running out of water. Their aquifers are nosediving. I tried to interest Senator McCain in creating a 5 million gallon a day open source energy water desalination solution. So we would pump 5 million gallons a day from a pilot plant in the Gulf of Mexico, and it would come up through the Indian Territories and into Arizona and Fort Huachuca and Tucson and Phoenix. And his staff blew me off. They weren't interested in low-cost solutions. They were only interested in very expensive defense projects that would give them a huge bribe paid into their political action campaign fund. So the president is unaware of all of this stuff. He doesn't realize that we can redo his infrastructure, we can refill the aquifers, we can provide free energy across the country, we can do so much with open source everything engineering. This is absolutely the last thing that his secretaries of Treasury and Commerce want him to know about, because it means that the banks will get less.
This is what he talked about doing when he was running with regard to infrastructure, and you've just handed him the model.
I am totally in sync with what the president wants to do, but he does not know that he can do it at 10 to 20% of the cost of what everyone else is telling him.
Is there any way to involve the banks so they don't bankrupt the projects?
That's a good question. I think a presidential pardon and send them to Bermuda would do nicely.
Short answer, no. That's pretty good. Okay, regaining my composure here, okay? You're not supposed to do stand-up comedy, okay? Because I lose my train of thought. We got just a few minutes left, and I wanted to give you an opportunity here to do a couple of things. One is where you want to leave this interview, what message you want people to take away, and then secondly, how people can follow your good work.
One of the reasons an open source agency is so important, I mean, CIA has fought me on this for 30 years. The Office of Management and Budget has approved an open source agency at $2 billion a year twice, once in 2000 and once in 2010. And CIA has fought it desperately because they understand that if I get an open source agency, 70% of their budget is at risk, as is 70% of the budget of every other secret intelligence agency. Mm-hmm. They're all there to spend money, not actually answer questions. But what I really focus on is the intersection of education, intelligence, and research. Education, of course, refers to the education of the public. We have a public that is ignorant, and that is by design. And we need to fix that. That's a long-term project, but it can be done, and I think the answer lies partly in 7-minute videos. I think we can re-educate the nation if the president puts his force behind it. We can re-educate the nation almost overnight. One of the first biggest challenges is to get people to understand that they've been lied to their entire lives. half of our history, half of our science, half of our medicine is a lie. Okay? People need to understand that they have been lied to by the academy, their education, their banks, their corporations, their labor unions, their religions, lies. Intelligence is about decision support. The one thing that is not being done anywhere in the world is called true cost economics. A McDonald's hamburger, if you add up all of the true costs, including water usage and energy usage and release of toxins into the air and child labor all the way along the thing, a McDonald's quarter pounder with cheese actually costs over $200.
Oh, boy, that caught me off guard. That's
I'm telling you something. True cost economics is where it's at in terms of the future.
We're gonna
the
have
president
to do a,
has no one doing true cost economics.
And we're going to have to do a show on that, but... Robert, if I don't leave you time, we're not going to be able to tell people how to follow your work.
All right. Then I take it that we're ending before 6 o'clock. All right. Let me just say.
We're on the clock here.
How many minutes do we have
and
left?
I have 1 minute and 30 seconds before they take me off the air.
All right. Then let me just say that I'm very grateful for the time with you and your audience.
Likewise.
Look up Robert David Steele. You'll get right to my website, which is robertdavidsteele.com. My blog, phibetaiota.net, is free, no ads, 4 to 5 emailed posts a day, which can be dropped down to a daily or a weekly. And I would be deeply grateful for donations. Even though I've been offered money, I haven't seen it yet. Right now, I've got $1,000 in the bank. I'm paying an accountant, and I am beating back massive attacks on my website. The Zionists are not happy with me at all, but I am very proudly working my way up from number 7 to toward number 3 on the AIPAC hit list. If I ever run for president and announce my plans to close down AIPAC and PNG, the Zionist embassy, I expect to be number 1. Donations can be made to paypal.me/earthintel. And I personally answer every donation, which means that your donation buys a conversation with me. And I would be honored to have that conversation if you choose to make a donation.
Well, you got good timing. We have 15 seconds left.
And then let me end by saying God bless America, God bless Dave Hodges, and God bless Donald Trump.
Okay. And thank you for coming on. This was an intriguing 2 hours. I want to do something on true cost down the road, but right now we got to say adieu. Stay tuned, everybody, for hour number 3 here on the Common Sense Show. Our thanks to Robert David Steele for some great information. We'll see you on the other side.